Welcome back to More Than You Know, and sorry it's been a while, but we're finally back with a new episode. We're going to be talking about Taiwan and COVID-19 today. So it's going to be about the political and economic impacts, along with a few facts about how Taiwan is doing, because we all know that Taiwan's doing really well. So before we start, let's just introduce ourselves again. So we have Harsh, Rishi, Kaju, and here. Let's start off with a fun fact again. So Harsh, what is your fun fact of today?
My fun fact for today is that my favorite juice is apple juice.
Rishi, what about you?
My fun fact is my favorite moon is Titan.
And my fun fact is I like eating chips. What about you, Kaju?
My fun fact is that I really enjoy reading about Greek mythology.
Good. Okay, let's get started. So, Harsh, can you please inform us on the background of Taiwan and how they're doing with the virus?
So, the pandemic, as you know, has had a much smaller impact in Taiwan than in most other countries, with a total of just 7 deaths recorded as of 11th May 2020, and no deaths recorded from then. The number of active cases peaked on April 6th with 307 cases, but the overwhelming majority of which were imported cases. Taiwan's handling of the outbreak alongside its regional neighbors such as Singapore and South Korea has received international praise for its effectiveness in quarantining people and widespread testing. As of 23rd December, there have been 280,159 tests solely being conducted in Taiwan, with the vast majority not confirming any COVID-19 diagnosis. The reason for its massive success in terms of handling COVID-19 is that all travelers that have been admitted into Taiwan must complete a 14-day quarantine upon arrival, except business travelers from countries determined to be at low or moderate risk, who are subject to only 5 or 7 day quarantines and must submit to a COVID-19 test. However, in response to a worldwide spike in cases during October and November 2020, during which the winter season really kicked in, Taiwan announced that from the 1st of December 2020 to the 28th of February 2021, all travelers to and through Taiwan, regardless of nationality, origin, or purpose, must submit a negative COVID-19 test performed within 3 working days upon arrival. The virus initially was confirmed to have spread to Taiwan on the 21st of January 2020, with the first case being a 50-year-old woman who had been teaching in Wuhan, China. The woman, who had just returned to the international airport in Taipei from her teaching job in Wuhan, she self-reported on her own initiative and was hospitalized without formal domestic entry. The first domestic case, however, was recorded on the 28th of January. A man in his 50s was believed to have acquired the disease from his wife, who had traveled to Wuhan. Among the first confirmed cases was a Taiwanese man in his 50s and was fined approximately 300,000 Taiwanese currency for his failure to report his symptoms and attempting to conceal his subsequent activities. Now, 300,000 Taiwanese currency is approximately $10,000. And so as a result, from the beginning, Taiwan has displayed the kind of strict measures that it's going to implement for anyone that would not comply to its strict COVID-19 rules. Most recently, on the 22nd of December, a contact of a New Zealand pilot working for Ava Air, which is Taiwan's national airline, who flew into Taiwan on the 4th of December, was diagnosed with COVID-19, making the first local transmission since April 2020. Local authorities stated that the man would be fined 300,000 Taiwanese currency, approximately $10,500, for not recording all the contacts and places he had visited and not wearing a face mask. So recently, although there has been a locally transmitted case, I believe that Taiwan has still kept it under control. However, with this new locally transmitted case, we don't know if there may be possible spillover effects or the fact that there could be possibly more locally transmitted infections after the specific infection has been diagnosed. So now that we've spoken a little bit about what we've given a little background into what's happened, there's been a recently transmitted case, locally transmitted case. We've known how Taiwan has handled all of these cases pretty well. Now let's speak a little bit about how Taiwan has done this. What specific preventive measures have Taiwan put in place such that they've been so successful in controlling the outbreak? Here, why don't you guide us through some of the preventive measures that Taiwan has put in place?
So in terms of the preventative measures, this was basically last year on around the 31st of December. The Taiwan Centers for Disease Control, so the CDC of Taiwan, they basically implemented inspection for flights that are coming from Wuhan, China, because obviously the first case was reported in Wuhan. So all the passengers on those flights were inspected by health officials. So that would be like checking their temperature or basically things like that, checking for symptoms. So by the 5th of January, the CDC then began monitoring all individuals that had traveled to Wuhan within the 14 days, because basically then 14 days was sort of known as the period that the virus could develop and your symptoms could start developing. So they investigated all the individuals that traveled 14 days and exhibited symptoms. So that's basically what happened when the virus first started breaking out. And then on sort of later January, the Taiwanese government announced a temporary ban on the export of face masks. So they wouldn't export or import any face masks just to secure a supply of masks for their own citizens. So they wanted to obviously stop the virus from spreading in Taiwan first. So they made sure that they couldn't export any face masks. And then the ban was extended until April. And then it was further extended until June. On the 6th of February, in terms of masks, because obviously there was like a world shortage of masks, so the government instituted a mask rationing system. So citizens of Taiwan would have to present their national health insurance card, and then they would get like masks on a rationing basis. So because of the outbreak, level 3 travel alerts have been issued by Taiwan. Essentially, what this means is Taiwan authorities suspended tours to China, and they suspended this from February to April. And then it also expanded in Hong Kong and Macau, because obviously Hong Kong and Macau are bordering China. And then on the 31st of January, Italy banned flights from mainland China, Hong Kong, Macau, and Taiwan as well, because obviously Taiwan's really close. Moving forward from what they took in terms of like bans, they also closed schools and proceeded with online learning after the very first case was reported. This was a very big step because obviously with schools open, the virus could spread a lot more. Okay, so that was basically the preventative measures that Taiwan has taken. And as you can see, they've taken all these steps quite early on, which is, I definitely think, is one of the main reasons why Taiwan has been doing so well, because they have these measures in place for a long time, and now they're thriving. So let's move on into the sort of economic impact of Taiwan. Rishi, can you tell us more about this?
Of course. Well, to begin with, it's important to understand that Taiwan was already a very successful economy before COVID-19 even hit, with a poverty rate of under 1.5%, which is one of the lowest in the world overall. Additionally, ever since the beginning of COVID-19, globally, there's been a 6% decline in GDP. However, Taiwan has only suffered from a 0.6% decline in the second quarter. And in fact, in the first quarter, there was actually 1.5% growth, which technically means Taiwan wasn't even in a recession. Moving on, because of the effectiveness of Taiwan's public health response, there was no lockdown that had to be implemented. And because of that, this allowed local businesses to continue running and local services to continue going on, which prevented large-scale unemployment, as we can see in multiple countries across the globe, such as India and the US. Moreover, the government also introduced a $2 billion relief package to mitigate the economic impact in the form of subsidies to firms and investment into education and healthcare, which further prevented unemployment and ensured that the economy could keep running. Additionally, one of the major things that the Taiwan government did was implement nudge theory and enforce choice architecture in the form of stimulus coupons. The Taiwan government used stimulus coupons to encourage citizens to buy primary commodities and encourage domestic tourism overall, and set an expiry date of the 31st of December this year. As a result, this resulted in more Taiwanese citizens purchasing primary commodities and encouraging domestic tourism overall, which prevented the loss of income for these industries. Moreover, in April, there was in fact a 2% rise in the exports of high-tech device exports, despite the fact of the massive changes in the global supply chain as of right now. And as a result, this allowed the Taiwanese economy to prevent having leakages. Moreover, in general, in Taiwan, there was an increased demand for high-tech products such as 5G, high-tech computing devices, and electronic components. And as a result, these industries flourished in Taiwan, which in general, Taiwan is known famously for, which further reinforced the ability of the economy to survive.
That's very, very interesting. Can you tell us more about basically what commodities mean and what you mean by citizens buying that more?
Primary commodity is basically just agricultural goods or goods that come from the primary sector. So these goods are basically your raw materials such as coal, food, rice, oil, stuff like that. In general, in Taiwan, the agricultural sector is not that big, but it is still prevalent, and that's why the Taiwanese government still introduced these stimulus coupons to prevent these low-income workers from basically becoming unemployed.
Can you tell us more about the aviation and tourism industry? Because obviously that's also a big part of the economy.
Of course. So obviously, since due to the global recession and lockdowns in countries and the inability of people to travel, in general, international tourism in Taiwan has decreased significantly. But as I mentioned before, due to the introduction of stimulus coupons, the lift of the lockdown, and all of these factors resulted in a massive increase in domestic tourism. So basically, the tourism industry obviously are not doing as well as they used to do, but they're still able to survive based on what they have right now. However, the aviation industry, on the other hand, in Taiwan is definitely suffering. This is because obviously, since due to the lockdowns in certain countries and the inability of people to travel across, the overall demand for flights and aviation and travel services has decreased massively, including Taiwan, since people aren't allowed to travel internationally. As a result, this can be seen in Taiwan's largest airport, the Taoyuan International Airport, in which only 669 passengers arrive and depart at one point, which is extremely low. This also resulted in the airport having to decrease the number of boarding gates due to the lack of people traveling overseas. And on May 13, especially, the EVA reported a net loss of 1.2 billion Taiwanese dollars because of the low demand caused by the pandemic.
Apologies for that notification. Okay, let's move on to the political impact that Taiwan has with COVID-19.
Right. So just briefly discussing the political impact that COVID has had. Taiwan has actually taken this as an opportunity to strengthen their international relations by sending out a ton of aid to other countries. Harsh, you have quite a bit of knowledge about this. Can you kindly elaborate?
Yes, in this circumstance, Taiwan has taken the opportunity that they have, the advantage that they have in the fact that they've managed to curb the spread of COVID-19. And they've used this as an opportunity to strengthen their relations with other countries by distributing aid such as face masks as well as sanitizer to other countries. Now, the countries that they've mainly targeted have been Western countries such as the US, the EU, and the UK. Well, now the UK after Brexit. So as a result of that, Taiwan has been able to strengthen its relations with its allies. And so now, thinking about it from a wider, more political perspective, why has this aid come in like that? Why are they all of a sudden helping only these Western countries? Now, the reason for this, I believe, is because of the imminent threat that they have of China. they want, I believe that their reason as to why they've specifically tried to implement a more constructivist school of thought, which is more collaborative, is because they're trying to strengthen their relations in response to any sort of threat that is going to come from China, if you didn't know, China believes that Taiwan is part of them. And so Taiwan shouldn't be a separate country. And so therefore they will not declare any independence. They will not allow Taiwan to declare independence. And so
I just like to add in that this is a contested issue that we're not forming any opinion about. We're just letting you know about the current situation. However, we as a podcast have decided to be unbiased politically, so we have no say about this. However, Harsh, can you just continue? Thanks.
Yep, completely agreed with Kaju, where we don't have much of a say in this because we just want to deliver the facts to you. But yes, China does believe that Taiwan should be part of them, and Taiwan believes that it deserves independence as well. And that is rooted in a deep, long history between two different political systems. So as a result of that, Taiwan is trying to form, I believe that Taiwan is trying to form these allies just in case China feels the need to put any pressure on Taiwan, such that Taiwan can lean back on these allies, such as the US, the EU, and make sure that these countries will provide Taiwan the support that they need if, for example, China does attack Taiwan, or China stops supplies from stops supplying to Taiwan, because China supplies approximately 40% of all products to Taiwan. So if that supply line is cut, then Taiwan has something to lean back on. And I believe that they've used COVID-19 as a way to capitalize on this. And they've used a more collaborative stance, a more constructive school of thought as a means to really capture the attention of all these Western allies and really allow them to form stronger connections with each other. And this has been imminent, especially with the more U.S. visits that have been, the more visits done by U.S. Diplomats to Taiwan in order to form new treaties, and Taiwan's diplomats' visits to other countries to form more treaties with them, form more regional treaties, and to increase bilateral ties and strengthen bilateral ties between different countries and Taiwan.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Thank you for the insight. Let's sort of move on to what the world can learn about Taiwan, because obviously they're doing really well. And I just think that there's a lot other countries can do. For example, the U.S. Obviously, like, I've heard that, like, even when you go to the U.S., you don't have like a 14-day quarantine when you go there. And I think that's like something that they really have to work on. So Harsh, can you tell us more about the lessons the world can learn from Taiwan?
Yep, sure. I feel like Taiwan as a country, I feel like the world can definitely learn a lot from Taiwan, especially in terms of how to control a public, in how to essentially control infectious disease. So to begin with, I believe the world, there are seven different lessons that I put together in thinking what the world can learn from Taiwan. The first lesson would be each country should establish or strengthen a dedicated national public health agency to manage both prevention and control of pandemics, as well as other public health threats. Such an agency could take in the form of the Center for Disease Control, and which many countries already do have, but they don't promote it actively. And so I believe promoting this agency and strengthening it should be of utmost importance for most countries. Secondly, all countries should also formulate a generic pandemic plan that allows for responses to different disease agents with diverse characteristics, in that whenever there's a threat of an epidemic happening or a pandemic, each country should already have a plan as to exactly what to do, such that there aren't any delays in communication, so that any policies that need to be implemented can be implemented absolutely immediately, such that the public essentially and civilians do not have to suffer. Thirdly, surveillance systems should be enhanced, both for national and regional disease. Surveillance systems act as an excellent way to track disease, as well as where disease can be transmitted from one to another. Korea has been an excellent example of how a surveillance system can help in tracking down disease, and how from one specific transmission of an infectious disease, how it can lead to the infection of multiple different people. And so strengthening that surveillance system and allowing for effective tracking of infectious disease is extremely important in trying to mitigate sort of the effects of a pandemic. The fourth lesson that we can learn is that we should develop effective border management policies and associated infrastructure that can be implemented quickly. So that means that it really is over here a way off between sort of tourism and economics and like keeping the economy strong, as well as public health, keeping public health, sort of any public health infectious disease problems under control. So I feel like in this situation, public health and infectious disease should really take priority over keeping any sort of economic problems under control. Because right now, if any sort of issue comes off in terms of disease, the economy is the first thing that's going to suffer besides the civilians. And so as a result, it's important to develop effective border management policies and shut all borders and shut all tourism for a limited amount of time such that a country can have control over a disease. We can see in the US that there's really no restriction on flights. All flights are allowed into the US right now. No countries have been restricted from that. And that is essentially to promote economic activity, which in my opinion is sort of useless if within the country domestically, you're facing a public health crisis that has been probably the worst public health crisis the country's faced in many, many years. The fifth lesson we can learn is that we should establish more robust quarantining rules and more secure facilities for incoming travelers. I believe Hong Kong is an excellent example of this, because in Hong Kong, there have been quarantine centers especially established for high-risk patients, where patients are provided with food, they're provided with any sort of amenities that they require insofar as they stay within the quarantine center. And there are extremely hefty fines if they do manage to escape, which is very, very difficult to do anyways. And I believe that each country should have such policies implemented. They may not need to implement definitely a whole quarantine center, but definitely keeping home quarantine and making sure that these individuals stay within their homes and they're self-isolating is extremely important as well. And trying to implement that is also very, very important, such that if we can see in the US, there is no mandatory quarantine. No one needs to quarantine for anything or self-isolate or quarantine at all. They don't even get any watches or any sort of tracker to see if they're within their homes. So that's effectively just going to increase the spread of the virus. And not only is it going to increase it domestically, but internationally as well. Because as you know, viruses can easily cross borders. The sixth lesson we should learn from Taiwan is that we should develop an effective means of face mask distribution. Taiwan has been very gracious in trying to distribute masks to all of their civilians, and the government has provided opportunities to provide reusable masks to civilians just in case that they do not have any or in case there's a short run supply of them. And so it's very important that other countries do continue that as well and the government should try and establish mask producing factories such that any sort of safety measures can be implemented as soon as possible. And the lesson we should learn from Taiwan is that we should really review the healthcare workforce, and we should really put greater emphasis on workforce management, especially within the healthcare sector. As a result of this pandemic, we've realized the greater need we have for doctors and nurses, as well as other healthcare professionals, such as allied health professionals as well. And so if other countries allow for better workforce planning, or if hospitals themselves allow for better workforce planning, it will allow these doctors and nurses and other allied health professionals to really reduce that kind of stress on them, because they do understand that we have this workforce planning essentially when the workforce essentially better organized. And so if the workforce is better organized, doctors and nurses are under less stress about when their schedules are and more focused on how to deal with the pandemic or how to treat patients. And so I feel like all hospitals should already have a sort of structure immediately if they go into an emergency crisis as to how to manage their workforce and how to essentially ensure that doctors and nurses and other allied health professionals do not get burned out when trying to treat patients. And so if this workforce planning is implemented, and if the rotating is allowed, and if the healthcare staff is rotated accordingly, it will allow for greater productivity, greater efficiency, and greater satisfaction among healthcare professionals, which is of the utmost importance nowadays, at least, keeping up the motivation and the spirits of the workforce professionals, because ultimately they're the individuals taking care of the patients. However, although I may have said all these lessons, not everything was perfect for Taiwan as well. Taiwan's management of and response to COVID-19 is not without concerns. For example, allowing the Diamond Princess. Now, the Diamond Princess was essentially a ship that most of the passengers on the ship got infected with COVID-19. They were essentially in the ocean. They were docked at a specific pier for quite a bit of time just to identify as to what to do with all these passengers on the Diamond Princess. And so what Taiwan did was they allowed the Diamond Princess passengers into Taiwan. And that drew a lot of criticism because although they had been tested for COVID-19 and many of them tested positive, why would Taiwan allow these individuals then into their country because they're potentially very, very infectious? So that drew criticism as well. But that's, I guess, more an argument into whether or not to support during times of crises or sort of be more, I guess, rooted within self-interest and really worry about your country as well. So that's a separate argument, I believe. And also, the Taiwanese public communications during the pandemic were predominantly provided in Mandarin Chinese and sign language. And so it wasn't really, in the sense, wasn't very open to all individuals. It was just mainly for a specific crowd. And so many individuals had to be a lot of the information had to be translated for a lot of individuals, which when in times of public health crises, there should be as many languages represented as possible because, I mean, in a country, there are going to be many, many different ethnic groups. There are going to be many, many people from different areas of the world. And so it's important to try and address, as many individuals as possible and as many languages as possible as well. And so I believe that those are some things, I guess, that Taiwan could have improved. But overall, the effective and the infectious, effectively the management of COVID-19 in Taiwan has been predominantly and largely successful.
Yeah, thank you so much for the insight on how Taiwan can learn. That was definitely very detailed. But that's basically it from us. We hope you enjoyed this podcast episode and learned a lot about Taiwan and just COVID-19 in general. Please do stay tuned for our next episode. We promise it won't be with such a long delay. But yeah, have a good Christmas and a happy new year, and we'll see you very soon. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.